This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Oh, is that it?
I think we're good. Yeah, I think we're good.
Bookie presents Shake Them Ropes. Use code ROPES. Get 50%, or up to 50% of your deposit in free play. Chris Novembrino, Jeff Hawkins. It is the third week of January. It is entering the 25th year of me being in Los Angeles. And after being in the 40s last week, it's in the 90s this week, Chris. I can't with this place. Because here's what it's done to me. This endless summer gimmick that Southern California kind of has, it makes you lose track of time where you think you've only been here for 2 years, but you've been here for 20 or upwards or even longer, because there's no seasons to help you coordinate the passage of time. So you always feel like you're in, I always call Los Angeles kind of a perpetual college campus of sorts, because it's nothing but young 20 somethings and people who want to be young 20 somethings.
That makes sense. That makes sense. I think especially with having to stay in more, not seeing actual seasons pass, kind of makes time feel even more squishy. I kind of have a little bit of that here in Texas, where like it snowed for exactly one day this year.
Do you usually get winter snow, are you? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of us. We had like one cold day, and it's like, okay, back to summer, everybody.
Yeah, now we're back to temperate weather. And don't get me wrong, I like this weather. You know, it's spring-like, fall-like weather, but I like not, you know, a zero-degree winter or whatever, but like an actual season of actual cold. I think it's
good. I like some autumn. I like it getting cooler, and then, you know, maybe like a week of winter. You know, some snow, you know, go out there, get sick of it, come back inside, go, okay, I'm ready for it to get to cool, and then a little bit of spring. And, you know, I just like seasons. I've been told now, what is this about a pigeon that you want to talk about?
All right, look, Hawkins, fake news is a real problem that is plaguing the nation and the world really writ large these days. And I was hoping this week for a hopeful story. Honestly, I've been hoping for a long time for a hopeful story. I think America needs hope. I think the world needs hope, honestly, right now. If you really think about it, I'm talking about COVID-19 people. And so Joe the Pigeon comes across the news wire this week. I don't know if it was a Monday, perhaps a blue Monday. I don't know if it was a bit of a downer Tuesday. But I saw this story about Joe the Pigeon initially, Jeff. And a feeling that I have not felt in too long. Hope. Pure hope.
About Joe the Pigeon.
Joe the Pigeon survived a flight across the Atlantic, apparently getting lost from the foresty regions of Oregon, where he was part of the great avian tradition of pigeon racing. Apparently, he had gone all the way across the Atlantic. And then I heard, Jeff, there was a twist in this story. The Australian government, the cruel Australian government, was getting ready, Jeff, to euthanize poor Joe. They said he represented a biohazard, that Joe could not be trusted, that we were going to have to put Joe down. And I was deflated. I was broken. I was angry at Australia. And I was hurt for all of us because we needed Joe. And then there was another twist. Joe's life was spared. And that, this part of the story could be good, Jeff, but it's not. Because it turns out Joe is faking it. He's an imposter, Jeff. This is a case of stolen valor. Joe did not fly across the Atlantic. Joe's apparently just some run-of-the-mill Australian pigeon. So when the world needed a hero, instead we get Joe the Pigeon, a fake, a phony, a sham, a mockery.
Now, hold on. The article you sent me said that he may have caught a ride on like a tanker that went across the ocean. But,
well, they said the racing tag was fake, though. His origin from Oregon story is a hoax.
And why did they call the pigeon Joe?
I mean, why not?
Oh, you didn't read that part of the story.
No, okay. I didn't.
Okay, no, they named the pigeon after Joe Biden.
Wow.
So they named an animal that didn't know where it was after Joe Biden.
Caught a big wave. He caught a big wave, and he got to where he wanted to go.
Okay, perhaps. maybe discombobulated. Doesn't know where he is. You know, I didn't believe you didn't read that part of the story that you sent me to read to that I set you
well,
up.
Well, you said, yeah, you asked for a primer on Joe, and I like pulled it up from the internet.
The story.
That's not where I was getting my Joe news. I just Googled that Joe story for you quickly, and I was like, here it is. You go and read that copy. I don't have to check every piece of copy I send to you, Jeff. I have to read all the details.
News, and you don't know this stuff. Well, you sent it to me like everybody knew this Joe the Pigeon story. Like it was.
They were putting it all over Twitter, Jeff. Twitter Jack was once again up to his antics, pushing his narratives, his fake pigeon narratives, lying to America and the world.
So Twitter's talking about, so all of America is. Oh,
that's how the Twitter trends work, buddy. You look that up in the book.
We've had our fight, and it's only 5 minutes in. Want to thank everybody for listening to this week's Between the Sheets, which I was on with Zellner and Bix. Also, I was on Andrew Rich's Music of the Mat, episode 100, talking about the themes of Sting. Happy he had me on. Probably won't have me back for another year or so, because it's just like, you know, me on that show, I don't know what it is. I'm all sorts of tangents and things of that nature, and Andrew's just Mr. Serious, sitting there with his dad jokes, waiting to get in. And
I can never tell if he's happy or displeased with my performances. He really, it really is like a father.
Yeah, you always you've done the show a few times. You always ask Andrew, "Hey, how'd I do?"
Right? Yeah. No, I get done, and I'm really unsure if I did a good job or if I didn't give him what he was looking for in the final product.
All right, some of the news. I'm going to start with this because I got a bit of a rant in me. Drew McIntyre taken off of Raw due to COVID, replaced by Triple H on Raw. I was thankfully spared from Raw because my DVR did not record it, and I did not seek it out after reading the results. So I'm a much happier wrestling fan this week. But here is my rant, Chris. My personal position versus what I'm willing to accept for the public are a little different. I've been pretty much locked up since late February, going out a few times for people to load groceries into my car, not going into buildings, wearing a mask everywhere I go, if I go out, but it's only been like 3 or 4 times, mostly having my groceries delivered to me. I took this seriously. I can handle being locked down for long periods of time because I'm a semi-shut-in. Now, what I'm willing to give for everybody else was I didn't necessarily want everything locked tight, but I'm also not the guy who's going to scream and yell at you if you don't have a mask, because I understand people sometimes forget. But I was willing to, in moderation, have reduced numbers of people going about their lives as long as they took precautions, as long as they had the masks on. Now, there's a problem in wrestling, and it's not just in wrestling per se. And I say per se a lot. I've been noticing a lot lately, so I'm trying to stop that, and I apologize. But the wrestling community is very, for lack of a better term, incestuous. And they love having house parties with each other. And they love having dinners and large gatherings at people's houses in the general vicinity of Florida. All over the state, but usually in the Orlando areas where a lot of them live. And some of these people are not taking it seriously. And it's a concern for the companies. It's a concern for Triple H. He said it as such. But
The Ricochet one, I'm sure that's on your mind. I want to slide this in. That one to me is really egregious considering the timing of this guy. He's going into a big contract negotiation. This picture comes out this week that makes him look like he's Johnny, I'm not cool about COVID safety guy.
There's a lot of that going around. There's a lot of some of the more social media type of people are putting a lot of pictures of them going up and having dinners and going out like nothing's happening. I'm mad at Casey Catanzaro because she had a birthday, I believe, last night and there's 30, 35 people at this restaurant. None of them are wearing masks. All of them are sitting very close together, having a birthday party like there ain't nothing wrong. Now, I get mad because it's, you read this over and over. I see, 12 people going to Disney World with masks on. It's like that misses the point. You're wearing a mask, yes. You're being safe, yes. But I just, this thing
the
ain't
mask,
over.
The whole thing with the mask, like, pulling it out from the social stuff. The whole point about the mask and the reason you're wearing the mask is sort of a recognition that right now when you're out in public, it is a suboptimal situation. So you're trying to take maximal protection.
Yeah.
It's not. Yeah. It's not like it. The idea of the mask is not that, especially if you don't have like an N95 mask. The idea of a mask is not that you're magically safe. This is not a totem that will keep you safe from COVID. This is just the best you can do in a suboptimal condition.
Because
it's really frustrating.
Because I have to go out, or right. I have to do something. Look, the businesses are open because they have to be open in some capacity to live, mostly. It's not so that you can live your life as normal. It's so that they can maintain some kind of revenue stream and you can shop, you can do all those things, but it's
a modest amount of risk mitigation.
Yes.
Yes.
And it drove me nuts when I saw this because I've seen pictures of these house parties and New Year's parties and holiday parties where wrestlers, like, you can have a dinner for four and be safe and do that outside. I'm not going to yell at you for that, but I'm seeing these large gatherings. I'm seeing them bar hopping every night, as some are wont to do, being in their 20s and 30s and single and good looking and all that other stuff. And you remember when we heard that when the wrestling companies were going to put on shows, how angry we were?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And now they're going to. Yeah, I get where you're going with this, I think.
And now it's like, okay, they've done some preliminary precautions for their employees, but once the employees are off the clock, it's like normal life again. And it's
some of these people are behaving like bad neighbors at this point. That's the thing, is it's like when you see Ricochet or Casey Catanzaro, I think Caden Carter's in that same photo too. Like when you see all these people sitting around, masks off, eating dinner in a restaurant inside. There's any number of things that make your head spin here, make your head reel.
And I'm not that guy. I'm not that guy that wanted.
I don't get joy in screaming at people like you're being an idiot about this. I just want people to not be stupid about it.
Yeah, it's.
I don't want to have a fight about it. I just want the behavior to stop.
I want the happy medium is what I want. I don't want to force every business to say we're closed so that you don't act like an idiot. But I also don't want everybody going, well, things are open, I guess I can live life as normal right now.
This has always been the real challenge, right? Like And the happy medium on that sense, because I basically want that too. I sort of think that we are not mature enough to achieve the happy medium, which is a real problem. Because to your point, then you get into something that is kind of, in one way, draconian. I was going to use draconian the other way of like, just let people do whatever they want. But draconian's not the right word there. But like, it's equally extreme in either direction. If you're shutting down the businesses, even if you give them bailouts, it's probably still not like the best model. And if people could just go around and they don't need to wear masks at all and can just run willy-nilly through these businesses, what we know now about COVID-19 transmission rates, even asymptomatic transmission, like that is a recipe for disaster And it's no accident that, like, I don't think this strategy is working, right? You know?
I think the term you might have been looking for, I think the term you might have been looking for is libertinism, just in a different
way.
It's almost
like a libertine. Yeah, draconian versus libertine.
Yeah, and I don't want either. I don't want my freedoms. I should be able to do what I want, blah, 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 blah. But I also don't want, we gotta shut everything down because, you know, like,
you shouldn't have to do that, right? Like, people should be, I guess to this point, people should be smart enough, or ideally, people would be mature enough about masks and getting that you got to wear a mask in order for this business to stay open and be able to operate safely without being a vector of transmission of COVID-19. If you're someone who wants the business open, and that's an important thing for you, even philosophically speaking, then you've got to be able to do steps that help that business stay open. And like, I just, you know, what, 10 months into this?
Let me jump on that before you move on from that, because that's the angle here that I think we should be taking when it comes to COVID and wrestling. Not just that if you want to keep the wrestling business open, if you as a wrestler do not take the fact that you have a responsibility to be on television doing the wrestling and you want to make all this money and you want to be a wrestling star, then you need to be a little bit smarter about this and stay away from people until this is done. I get it. I get the ones who are doing it and who have turned their garages into gyms, and some of them are working out with friends. I don't mind that so much necessarily. It's the social app. This is show
business.
Oh, no,
I encourage bubbling. If people want to create a social bubble where it's like you and the same four or five people are basically the people who hang out together all the time, like, that's your bubble.
I think they're trying to do that on a much larger scale.
Wrestlers
all hanging
quote
out
unquote having a bubble. One does not involve 25 people, and two does not involve going out to restaurants and eating. Like, it does not involve dining in public. That is, you know, I think that's part of it too. No, so I'm fine with some of that. Like, you know, people have to strike some balance. But getting back to the wrestling thing, I do think you have an obligation, I don't want to be like, you owe this business or anything like that. I just think, if I'm an employee, I'm not that guy. But I do think that if you're going to get given a 12-week angle, you have a responsibility once given that privilege of a 12-week angle to be sure that you're there to execute that 12-week angle. And when you go out and dine at a restaurant, I view that as dereliction of your employer. And like, I'm someone who's pretty pro-union and pro-worker on all this stuff, but I definitely am very sympathetic to the idea that if a company is going to give you a big, high-profile slot, you got to take care of it. Now, in the case of Drew McIntyre, it's WWE, the company, who probably put Drew McIntyre in a suboptimal situation. But yeah, with some of these other talents, for example, like the Casey Catanzaro, Ricochet, Caden Carter bubble, like, yikes. Some of these people are, putting themselves into harm's way unnecessarily.
Fightful has learned that internally the plan is for WrestleMania to occur on April 11th, 2021, 2 weeks after the original date of March 27th. Obviously the event will not be taking place in Los Angeles as planned. But if the date holds up, it won't be taking place at either Tropicana Field or the Amway Center either, as those are going to both be in use. I'm thinking they're going to use the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Stadium, much like they're supposed to do this year. I think they're going to do a partial capacity type show, Chris.
Okay. I wouldn't pay money for it. I wouldn't go.
One of our favorite things to follow is the Vince McMahon XFL stuff. And Vince McMahon filed a countersuit against former commissioner Oliver Luck, seeking $572,792.10 after Luck had sued McMahon for an amount in excess of $23.8 million. McMahon filed the suit on January 7th, claiming that Luck abandoned his job as commissioner as soon as the pandemic hit, and that he didn't listen to McMahon's directives when he signed Antonio Callaway, a wide receiver for the Tampa Bay Vipers, who never ended up playing in the league. Now,
that broke the league's back, if you're asking me.
Well, here's the Cliff Notes version. Is Callaway, I believe, violated that that policy that McMahon wanted about not having arrests and things of that nature. There's a dispute as to whether or not that policy exists. And that's also a part of this lawsuit.
I just like McMahon really caring about moral fortitude.
Luck cared about the level of play in the league. And he goes, these guys are terrible. We need other wide receivers. So they brought in Callaway, much to the consternation of Vince McMahon, who's texting him, what are you going to do about this? You have no chance. He literally tweeted, you have no chance in hell of this. And he tweets like he's a 13-year-old girl. But nevertheless, what happens is they bring in this Callaway guy to work out and they go, we can't keep him. Okay, but, you know, we're just kind of, working, you know, ESPN and stuff like that. We'll keep him around, but we'll get rid of him after this tryout camp. Well, Callaway gets hurt at the tryout camp. So the XFL is on the hook for the money for his medical expenses. And that's what Vince McMahon is mad about.
This is not a great position for Vince.
I think it's actually a good position. If this edict was true about, if it was a known company policy about bringing in low character types, I think Vince McMahon wins this lawsuit. I do. It's one of those things where, if he violated something in his employment clause, in his employment contract, that would be something. Okay. no further comments.
I'm not a big football guy. I'm trying to think it out. I don't know. I have a hard time really thinking that Vince cares about morals. Vince is not a morals guy. So like that, I that's the part where I'm dubious about this idea that there was a moral fortitude clause.
It was more counterbalancing the NFL thing where they just, the
Colin they let
Kaepernick
Michael Vick
stuff.
Back in and
that kind of stuff. Exactly that kind of thing. We're not going to let those kinds of people back in, which is a problematic view in its own right.
Well, Colin Kaepernick didn't go to jail, right?
No. But it was also just the number of arrests, people getting arrested at nightclubs, all those other things. It's basically, he wanted to put himself as, that phony, clean cut, all American boys playing football type thing. And it's just, you're right. He doesn't care, but for marketing purposes, it was just that thin veneer of BS.
It's a silly marketing thing too. I guess it has a certain appeal to one part of the political stripe. But let's think about this too a little bit further then, right? You're the alternative football product. You need every eye on the product you can get. So do you really want to be stepping into the culture war? Especially when you need to get the best talent you can get, and you probably need to accept, some B stock, if you will.
Yeah, but you see, but that was the whole thing, is they didn't want to step into the culture world. You'll never hear about our players, talking about this, that, and the other, or getting into trouble, or anything like that. We're not going to hit you over the head with...
Well, and that's what I'm saying, but by doing that, that is a culture war statement.
Yes, yes. It works against him, which is a problem.
And hurts the product.
Yes. WWE has officially announced Superstar Spectacle, a 2-hour television special featuring WWE's Indian talent alongside top stars from Raw and SmackDown. I have my doubt about the top stars part.
Push gender.
The event will premiere on Sony 10.1, Sony 10.3, and Sony Max on January 26th at 8 p.m., 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. It will emanate from the WWE Thunderdome and have commentary in both English and Hindi. So they're going for this NXT India thing, I think, too.
Hey, look, because I sometimes stream online or whatever, I actually do see the presentation from India, and as best I could tell on Indian television, it's not like that much of a mystery because a decent chunk of it's in English. WWE gets treated as pretty serious product over there, gets pretty decent visibility, and the market in India is over 1 billion people. If WWE gets popular over there, and it's not, entirely impossible that they couldn't have a surge of popularity over there. I don't think it's necessarily going to be a big America wrestling boom anytime soon, but, maybe WWE does establish themselves a nice little foothold in India. If it was something, half as big as America, they'd be happy with that.
Young Rock will premiere on NBC on February 16th. Focuses on a different chapters of Dwayne Johnson's life, from growing up in a strong and resilient family to being surrounded by the wild characters of his professional wrestling family to playing football at the University of Miami. The show will explore the crazy roller coaster that he shaped Dwayne, emphasis mine, I apologize, into the man he is today, and the larger-than-life characters he's met along the way. A hard pass for me, but I'm not going to fault it. You know, he's making money off of this. Great. I just, any, other than Muppet Babies, I want young nothing. I don't want
we got a Tiny Toons hater here. Wow.
I didn't like Tiny Toons as much as Animaniacs. So
Animaniacs is good.
Yeah. You know, Muppet Babies was great because it wasn't just, I don't know. I'll have to watch an episode or two just to see if it's standard family sitcom dreck or if it's actually something trying to say something. Look, I'm not the guy who wants to watch a sitcom and go, and it sends a powerful message to, it's like, no, I just want to laugh at dumb crap. So, you know, it could be funny. It could subvert my expectations in some way. I just think it's going to be, you know, I could see NBC going a throwback to when family sitcoms were blah, blah, blah. I'm just like, well, it's not my jam, but if it's your jam, great.
Yeah. I don't have deep thoughts about Young Rock.
You know, you don't. Come on.
No. Sorry. If you had given me all day to prepare hot takes for Young Rock, I still wouldn't have hot takes for Young Rock.
How about Young Slapjack?
Would Young Slapjack be a great show. So, like, think about this, Jeff. You could talk about when young Mr. Jack gets his first mask from Papa
mask.
Jack.
Wait, what's the name of his dad?
Papa Jack.
Papa Jack, okay.
Papa Jack, yeah. You know?
Maybe Hungry Jack?
Yeah, Hungry Jack, yeah.
Hungry Jack? Yeah, sure, why not?
He has pancakes. Yeah. Applejack, yeah.
His uncle, yeah.
Yeah, who lives in the country. He's a farmer. Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, that'd be great. Lots of different characters.
Their uncle the sailor, Captain Jack, and Billy Joel plays every time he walks in. Jeff, you're getting weird. Yeah, okay. Or, you know, Young Hulk, where we can explore the early terrible person that Hulk Hogan would become. This is when Hulk said his first racial epithet.
Yeah, his first experiences with diversity, yes, in America.
Either you love that joke or you hated it. I understand both, kids. Wednesday Night Wars, AEW 762,000, ranking 30th because of all the news coverage. NXT 551,000, ranking 70th on the night. Not a good night for either show, but when things happen in the news, everybody watches the news. So I guess there's an excuse for it.
Yeah, I mean, also, probably a broader commentary about the professional wrestling-like nature of news in America, especially when it comes to politics these days.
And finally, they announced the first four teams that are going to be taking part in the women's version of the Dusty Rhodes Classic. The aforementioned Casey Catanzaro and Caden Carter will be taking on Toni Storm and Mercedes Martinez. Oh, murder death. Although, I'll talk a little bit about that in a sec. Shotzi Blackheart and Ember Moon will be taking on Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell, who have also been announced. I expect four other teams of some sort to be announced in there. You know, possibly somebody from the main roster like the Riot Squad I could see coming down there. Who do you have win this tournament? Do you have somebody like a Catanzaro and Carter to establish an actual tag team in there and then maybe have them take on the women's tag team champions? Or do you have, you know, two big single stars like Storm and Martinez just kill fools like Carter and Catanzaro?
I feel like this tournament is a vehicle to build Catanzaro and Carter on some level. So I think they pull an upset on Storm and Martinez in the first round. I don't know that they win. They feel like finalists, but not the ultimate winners, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if you, I don't know if they've determined this, but if you give them a WWE Women's Tag Team title shot, it's going to be somebody on a higher level. And I think I think that's probably going to be Shotzi and Ember. I think they may win that just for that reason.
And then I wonder if Ember is going to turn on Shotzi.
Maybe eventually, I think. Yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't turn Ember so soon after turning Tony, but what do I know? I don't book this stuff. I expect maybe Io Shirai finds a partner and finds her way in this. Look, Bailey's on social media trying to get into this tournament. I'd love to see it, personally. She picks somebody from the Performance Center and goes on a team with them and loses in the first round and gets mad at them, or she causes the loss. I'd be down for that kind of surprise, too. Look, I love tag team wrestling. I love women's tag team wrestling. I'm looking forward to this. And I love this Storm and Martinez team because they work so well together as singles competitors.
You know, it's interesting, too. It's like WWE does have a different format for these tournament tag team style matches. And I find that style to be pretty enjoyable, generally.
Yeah. Before we get into the actual wrestling, thank our sponsors, MyBookie. For a sports book that's supposed to be in the business of making money, they were giving it away this winter. That's one of the reasons why I've been rolling with MyBookie this season. The fact is, you're going to put some action on the games, whether you're betting the NFL, NCAA, college ball, or college hoops. Whatever your preference, you want to do it with a reputable brand like MyBookie. Make your deposit using the promo code ROPES, R-O-P-E-S, and they'll match you halfway to give you a head start on building your bankroll. I myself, this past weekend, put on a $100 parlay on the six playoff games, and I lost all six on the money line, which I just could not believe that. But hey, put in $200, get an extra $100 to play with. Joining and depositing is a simple process, and it's quick. But most importantly, when it's time to get paid, that's quick too. I wouldn't know, I lost. But hey, I got 50 on the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl. The free play part. Treat yourself to some extra cash in your pocket this holiday by investing in your intuition. It's not just winter season, it's winning season, so bet, win, and get paid with MyBookie. By the way, if you want to put a few ducats down on the Royal Rumble, you can. I saw the odds there. I came very close to picking my two picks for the Rumble originally, which were Sheamus and Bayley, but I think those might have changed given some of the booking going around, but we'll see. But once again, use code ROPES at MyBookie. Get up to half of your deposit in there in free play. We thank them for sponsoring us and other shows here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. All right, let's get the main roster out of the way. I didn't watch Raw, as I said, but I know Alexa Bliss shot a fireball into Randy. Okay.
Yeah, that main event, man, that main event was really, really something. Not in any sort of good way. It was really something. Triple H.
Top to bottom just seemed bad. I've read all the results. Yeah, it's like the Bobby Lashley Matt Riddle thing is confounding in so many ways because those two could just beat the hell out of each other and be awesome, but they make it weird. You know, Triple H coming back to, you know, to basically take one for the team against Randy. And it didn't feel special for the couple of minutes I watched before I flipped over to Alabama and Ohio State, but just up and down reading these results, nothing really stood out to me as exciting.
What stood out to me, though, was the thinness of the roster and how a lot of booking choices were made in this show to limit personnel and to try to milk or squeeze as much juice out of the lemon with each person out there. So in the case of like Sheamus and Keith Lee, they defeat The Miz and John Morrison. And then they still have beef, so they have an additional match. The combined time between the two of those matches just alone is over 20 minutes. But essentially, you're still only using four people to get through 20 minutes of TV time. I was noticing some of that. I'll say this. I liked the Keith Lee rebuild and kind of blowing off the Sheamus stuff the way they did it. I thought it was necessity being the mother of invention. Like initially I was like, oh, that's cool, but then they did something similar later on in the show with Riddle and Lashley where like they had multiple matches with the same sort of people in them, and I was like, oh, okay, I see what's going on here. I see the game we're playing. You know, you gotta make do. What, especially as to go back to our earlier conversation, when you've got talent going out and not necessarily being hyper cool about COVID safety. Yo,
your boy T-Bar won.
He is not my boy. Don't. Well, stop hey, that. Stop that. Stop
you are
that.
A Retribution fan, aren't you?
I am a Slapjack fan. I don't all of them. No, Slapjack.
Not Ali.
Ali's okay. He pretends to be the leader.
But Slapjack is the heart and soul of the Ghostbusters.
And the actual leader. The actual leader. Then you got, what's her name? She's been sandbagging. She's been, really in the mud here lately. They wanted to get Ricochet in, but, what I've seen of this guy, not so much. Guy never wins. He's a loser.
Let's talk about SmackDown, because it wasn't a bad show. I liked a lot of it.
SmackDown continues to be an easy watch that, like, I'm not super emotionally invested in it, so I can't get, like, way too high and, like, yeah, SmackDown. But every episode here for the last month, I've been like, this is largely good and enjoyable, and or I get an interesting and fun match or fun pairings, and, like, it seems like there's not a lot of overwriting. And, sometimes there is, in the case of Rey Mysterio here. But, like, sometimes you get things like Cesaro and Daniel Bryan, and it's cool, man.
I'll go over some things I found that I liked. I will save a couple of things that did not interest me, because this was a week where WWE take the things that give me joy and make me not want to like them. So I'm going to tread carefully on those, Chris. I think we know what we're talking about, but... I think you know what I'm talking about. I think we know. I think you know what I'm talking about here, but let me go
I hope
some
you know
things.
What you're talking about.
I rarely do, as women who have dated me say. I liked that Nakamura and Cesaro are still friends. They're still heels. They're just self-interested, so they can fight whoever they want, be it babyface or heel. I kind of dug that. I kind of dug that little interesting choice. Well, they didn't quite babyface Nakamura all the way, although I thought last week they had.
That's interesting. I read that differently. I think Cesaro's going to turn on Nakamura.
Oh, I think he's going to eventually.
No, I think Nakamura effectively is a babyface. It's just that Cesaro's his friend still, at least in Nakamura's mind. But I think Cesaro actually ends up aligning with Roman Reigns. I think Roman's making a faction.
I liked the vignette with Apollo Crews and Roman in the office there, because it's perfect continuity from, if you haven't watched it, you must watch Apollo Crews and Paul Heyman on Talking Smack from last week. It was fantastic. I like that Apollo's actually trying to learn to be a better heel from the main heel, and he actually took Paul Heyman's advice from Talking Smack and actually started to pursue it. I thought that was kind of, and it was nuanced. It was kind of like, yeah, well, here's what you need to do, da, 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 da. And then they do the skit, and then they go back to kind of giving strategy. I thought that was really cool.
I like what they're doing with Apollo. The match with Zayn was interesting. It was weird because Zayn's a heel, and then Apollo
Zayn's a geek. Let's put it correctly. It doesn't matter if a baby face.
He's a punchline. So he's like, even if he's a baby face, he'd still be a punchline.
And especially now that he is a conspiracy theorist with a camera crew documenting it all, it doesn't matter what he is anymore. He's a crazy person who will always get screwed by either side. Obviously, they asked him to show his butt tonight just to give Vince a laugh. But yeah, he's a comedy guy who's gonna get beat, and then just get exasperated, and we're all gonna laugh. That's the whole point of this. He's our truth for SmackDown, is what he is, right? Is that an adequate?
Yeah, no, it's not. I don't disagree with the analysis. I think Apollo and Big E will ultimately have a good match. I think it's good for this. Gives Apollo something new to do. If I'm right about Cesaro ultimately ending up aligned with Roman Reigns, maybe that means like Apollo and Cesaro make a tag team, and that'd be a good tag team.
I think that's interesting. They beat Daniel Bryan tonight, but I also think
that was a good match.
It was a great match.
Yeah.
I think it gives more credence, though, to there's going to be this mini losing streak going into Rumble if Daniel Bryan's going to win. Now, I'm not sold on he's going to win just yet, but they're doing what WWE does to Rumble winners, which is beat them in the few weeks leading up to the Rumble so that you don't suspect that they're going to win the Rumble. So I'm thinking he might be a good bet to win it. Now for things that grinded my gears slightly, and I'm going to start with the big one. Aunt Pam has a talk show. I don't like talk shows in wrestling because it defines people down. There's never been a main eventer who's had a talk show other than maybe Piper on his Ascent as the first one. But, you know, Adrian Adonis, Brutus Beefcake, Paul Bearer, Kevin Owens. It's defined Kevin Owens down somewhat. Although, well, I'll get to Kevin Owens in a bit. I think this is something she should have said no to, personally. I understand what they're trying to do to make her more entertaining. She is very entertaining on the mic. Her outfit tonight was the most Aunt Pam outfit ever, and I loved it.
It was
classy.
Somewhere between Velma and Harry Potter, and I thought that was hilarious.
There was that, you know, very, very college professor chic, if you will, with the jacket and the turtleneck and the glasses. I think that's the best she's ever looked, because as a gentleman, I think,
you?
Yeah, well, I mean, when she dresses up, she's had some, they've put her in some interesting clothing that I don't think quite suits.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You can display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. keyless entry. No more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Her look. And I think this is her best look that I've ever seen her in, quite frankly. I'm not going to go too much into it, but this is the best I've ever seen her look.
I'm hung up on the concept of you as a gentleman, sir.
I'm a scholar and a gentleman. I'm a man of letters. I read.
I like book.
I like book. I've read 1984.
What you're doing to me is extremely Orwellian, sir.
Billy Kay, you know I love me some Billy Kay.
Oh, she's so... This is fun. I liked this.
No, I hated this.
Yes.
No.
Mosh pishing, that was great.
Now, that was great. That was great, but the ending of that match was dog crap.
No, that was crap, but her on commentary was funny as hell.
It was fantastic, especially Corey calling her out. Because that's the best part of it, is Corey wouldn't let that slide. So Billy Kay had a thing on her feet, and she was fantastic at doing it.
She's
that part
really
I love.
Funny, man. She's really funny. Like, that's a skill. Like, that's a... And she's quick-witted. I hate the finish of this match is stupid. But she's funny. I like funny Billy Kay. More of this.
Yeah. Adam Pearce, I like... The character overall.
WWE official Adam Pearce. Official what, you might ask? Just an official.
Nobody knows.
His position is official.
His position is to eventually hand it over to Sonya. That's his position, I think. Who, again, looks fantastic in a suit as well. I just like women who look good in
suits.
She
needs to stop corpsing during these things. Like, she doesn't know what to do with her face when, like, she's not saying anything and all she's supposed to do is look.
Yeah, no, she has to get a mindset of everything being said in that room is stupid. And then she won't corpse. And she doesn't, and she should just tune out. She should just tune out, have this look of disdain, and go with it. Because otherwise she's going to corpse. I agree. My problem with the Adam Pearce story is that who is forcing Adam Pearce to do all this signing of the contract?
None of it makes any sense.
He's
it's
an
so
official.
Weird.
If
He's
Vince
an official.
There, if Vince were there and saying... Well, because you were in the match and because, you know, of obligations, I'm going to force you to hold you to your word. There just need to be that little bit of it because it makes no sense.
He's effectively a matchmaker and a manager. And then there was like the weird quote unquote official loophole. But it doesn't make any sense that Roman has this ability to flex on Adam Pearce. And it's just, it's contrary to every sense of authority structure we've ever had on Raw in the last 15 years. There's either the McMahons, and in which case their word is God, or there is like a general manager type character, like a Johnny Ace or a Vicky Guerrero, or a more neutral one like a Shane McMahon or Adam Pearce. But in that case, that person is deputized by the company with matchmaking authority. They're an NPC. They don't wrestle, but they have the ability to make matches and break matches and do what they think is in the general best interest of the company, unless the company advises them they want a specific parent. And in which case they execute it. Like, that's, they never spell that to you out loud, but those are the rules that one would glean by watching this television week to week from any year that starts with two on WWE television.
Yeah, and Kevin Owens is coming back to fall off of something at Royal Rumble. That's what's gonna happen. He's gonna fall off of something, go through something, be down for 10. That, you know, I love Kevin Owens. I think Kevin Owens should be one of the biggest stars in professional wrestling, if he's not already. But I think he should be a legendary, top of the card. I know I brought up the Dusty Rhodes comparison at one time. But to Vince, he's a guy on the heavy side who can fall from high spaces and take the damage. I just, unless he's going to win the title, and I just don't see that going into WrestleMania. I don't see Kevin Owens winning this title, unless he's going to win it, or unless he's going to lose it at Elimination Chamber. I could see a one-month Kevin Owens title run here.
But I was kind of bothered by the idea that Pierce didn't give the title shot back to Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yeah, that too. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
No, like I don't need more... I don't need more Kevin Owens. Like, I wasn't jonesing to revisit this pairing. I like Kevin Owens. It's just like that they ran this one into the ground for me. And the narrative dictates are essentially that Nakamura is the one who's aggrieved here, and he should be the one getting a title shot, not Adam Pearce hooking up his buddy Kevin Owens. Because, like, that's the whole auspices there, is that Owens knew Pearce back in the day, and this is Pearce kind of finally making right that situation from like 6 or 8 weeks ago.
Yeah, and I think they dropped the Nakamura thing after this week. I do. I think they just move on to whatever Cesaro and Nakamura are going to do, and they just forget about him getting screwed in the number one title or contenders match, which, you know, it's like, okay, then why did you go through all that to do that? Just for the Uso match? Okay, cool. Yeah, I just don't get it. Any other thoughts from the main roster?
Yeah, I didn't, the actual skit that Bayley was in did nothing for me.
No.
Rey Mysterio and Dominic Mysterio. Dominic is too old now, or appears too old now, for you to have him playing as a kid. He is a grown ass man, and he looks like a grown ass man, a young man. But he does not look like a kid anymore.
Yeah, before I comment on that, one quick thing. If you haven't seen the Stone Cold podcast with Bayley on the network, she's so great. She's so great in that. She's so honest and forthcoming. She's really, I love her, and I love her success. She's such a sweetheart, and she's great in that. All right, Dominic Mysterio, or Dominic Guerrero, depending on who you believe the parentage is. You will appreciate this reference. Some Brian Adias-like charisma on that kid. And he's not a kid, you're right. He's a man. We need promo school. We need more promos. It's just frustrating watching him. They had him talk off the cuff, and it's just, you could see what he was supposed to say, and you could see him getting flustered. And it was just, The Mysterio school of acting, and I thought they were setting him up for a heel turn as well. What do you think?
I do think that they're setting him up for a heel turn. At least I hope so.
When they ask him about the tag team, he goes, yeah, it'd be nice to win some tag team titles with my dad, but I got other plans as well. I go, he's turning on the old man, and I'm here for that, because it's, number one, you can't do it in front of a crowd because nobody would buy it. But okay, sure. You know, have it. Now the question is, Does he join like Baron Corbin? Or does he go with Seth again when Seth decides to mosey on back again?
I'm equally dumbfounded as to what Mysterio's plan is for next week. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that Buddy Murphy gets tapped.
Where is Mr. Murphy and Aaliyah? That's what I want to know. What kind of terrible things has Murphy... has anybody cared about Rey Mysterio's daughter? Where is she? What's happened to her? Why is she hanging out with this guy in his 30s? Why?
I wish that we had more.
Did they drink hemlock from an apothecary? And the war's over between their families now?
I want the Mysterio stuff to be a segment. Like, if I was booking this show, it would be, you know, in like the B block or the C block of the show every week. So, you know, be buried in the middle. But we would have a Rey Mysterio cheesy telenovela skit / angle, like preluding to whatever match in-ring thing they're doing at this point. Like, you know, I loved Rey growing up. And I'm not a kid anymore either. So whatever we're building up to with Dominic here, it's fun in this stupid way, but it's bad when they try to make it real serious.
Oh, they're going to do a Jerry Springer type thing on one of these dopey talk shows, or they'll bring someone in to do a talk show with them. And it'll be fighting.
They'll always do it on a talk show. And there might be a signing thing. You know, they have a contract signing.
Who else can we define down? Let's give it to Becky Lynch. We'll call it the Man Show. And she'll come back in.
Oh, my God. I'm awarding 5 points for that one.
Yes.
Nicely done, sir. Oh. 5 points awarded.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Some quick AEW thoughts. Thought it was another solid show. The wrestling was quite good. I'm kind of here for the dumb comedy of Chuck E. T. being Miro's young boy and screwing up the wedding. I think that's what's going to happen. This is a tale as old as Jimmy Garvin and Precious, or was it Jimmy Garvin and Sunshine at the time, having to go work on the Von Erichs ranch. I am here for that. I'm here for Dusty having Baby Doll for 30 days and Baby Doll riding off on a horse. I am here for these type of dopey situations where heels get one-upped by baby faces or vice versa. I am cool with that.
Yeah. I'm not into the Miro Kip Sabian thing that they're doing.
Yeah. I'm not overall either,
but I'm not like, this is not pure to the wrestling art form or whatever like that. Nothing like that.
Thought Serena Deeb and Tay Conti had a pretty good little match. Really an indictment of the PC as to how much Tay Conti has improved. And that Serena Deeb was let go as a trainer. She has become a nice ring general, I think. And even though it's a secondary women's title on a show that doesn't need one, I think Serena Deeb has been a fine addition to this AEW program.
Yeah, I agree. I think Serena Deeb is really good. And I thought that Tay Conti looked great here. I've always been a believer in her. And I thought that WWE just missed a really great opportunity here with a really talented person. And I'm excited to watch her grow into her own. Just kind of keep developing.
Needs a little work on the acting. Just a little bit. And holding on to, like, when she's selling character, because I know she dropped it a few times in the match, but this was one of her better matches, I thought, and I agree with you on that one. And yet again, the debut on the actual television show of Britt Baker's talk show, the good Rebel / Reba, is a fantastic flunky. There are some fantastic flunkies on Wednesday night between her, Indy Hartwell, and Austin Theory. But I think she's head and shoulders above them. I don't care for talk shows. I want promos. I don't want comedy skits. The comedy was good on Wednesday, don't get me wrong, because AEW had two other segments with comedy that were quite good, I thought. Any other outstanding thoughts from AEW from you that you wanted to get into?
I continue to enjoy Griff Garrison and Brian Pillman Jr. as a young up-and-coming tag team.
That was a nice, and Lanza and I both had the same thinking on this. That was a 1986-87 six-man tag between the Horsemen and a couple of guys on the come and a guy who's going to take the fall. You know, it's that,
yep,
like the Andersons and Tully versus Sam Houston, Pez Watley, and the Italian Stallion. And the Italian Stallion's going to be the one that gets beat. And I thought the, what was the third guy's name?
Oh, Limelight. That's not Limelight. Which, tough name to pins, but yeah.
Formerly of the New Japan Dojo out here in LA, I believe. I thought that was a fantastic debut for him, even though he got beat. And you know, I don't like seeing guys lose in their debuts.
No, but like that was a fun match, man. Yeah, no, I liked good vintage vibes off of that, man. Like that was fun. I
thought the Jurassic Express FTR match was was quite fun too for what it was.
Yeah, I agree. No big surprises here, you know, like it wasn't like a shocking show, but like well-worked matches are nice. I guess for me, it's like Omega, I'm already bored with Omega on a certain level. I like Don Callis, but like I'm not super into the Good Brothers, Young Bucks, Omega angle. Like it's not, to me, the best usage of the top of the card.
And it's not best usage of Omega either, I don't think. I think there's a slight issue, and I read this criticism this week, and I sort of agree with it, that we need to build up Kenny a little bit more as a character before giving him the title,
yep,
versus building up the character after the title, because now we're kind of chasing, for lack of a better term, heft with him. And I don't know if this is necessarily doing it, but I love the Callis combination still.
This just didn't need to happen at the top of the card. I guess that's my bigger objection,
yes,
is that like whatever they're trying to do with Kenny Omega could have been done lower in the card, like with him as the like TNT champion, for example, and open and keep the top of the card for something that's maybe bigger.
I love Team Taz as a stable. I think it's great. You have the two muscle-bound guys, the young guy and the older veteran. You have a guy who's absolutely nothing like them in kind of the in the dandy Ricky Starks. And you have the young guy, Hook, who's just kind of learning, but he's going to take his bumps and kind of be the flunky of the crew. And Taz is such a great mouthpiece. I love this mid-card stable.
I do, too. I think Starks is really fun in this stable.
Yes.
Yeah, I really enjoy Starks.
I love that he won't wear orange because it clashes with his skin. That is the best. It's so good with his character. Yeah, AEW, another fun watch. But yeah, it's kind of, they're just kind of moving pieces right now. It felt like a lot of the angles didn't necessarily, they didn't make huge steps. They all kind of made half steps, and I'm fine with that in terms of story building.
Yeah, so we're going to be best friends with Adam Pearce, and the Dark Order stuff is kind of, that was actually kind of the
Adam
most
Page.
Substantial.
Adam Page, although I would like to see Adam Pearce in the Dark Order now.
That would actually be very funny. I know you
what
guys.
What am I doing here?
I know you guys want me to join Dark Order. I know that's what you're trying to get me to do right now.
Yes, over-enunciate Dark Order.
Dark Order.
And whatever catchphrase we've come up for the Dark Order. Right after it, because you always his gimmick is he goes to AEW and he speaks in WWE speak, where it's like name, catchphrase, marketing slogan. NXT UK again. Oh, this Ginny Joseph Connor thing is real. I am so disappointed.
It is real awkward. It is just awkward to see Joseph Connors next to Ginny, like an ugly version of Reginald on SmackDown.
I got mad at this because she goes, you know, you're probably wondering why Joseph Connors here. Well, I have a lot of money, and I would, you couldn't buy something better than Joseph Connor. You could have had both bootleg Kofi and Whoop guy for as much as Joseph Connor's probably costing you. You could have had Saxon Huxley for as much. You could have had anybody for as much as Joseph friggin' Connor. Now that being said, Kaylee Ray and Ginny, all over that, my friend.
Oh, it's gonna be really fun.
All over this.
I'm into that. I really am.
They did the continuity with her saying, I helped you keep that title, and her still being a heel going, ha, You didn't help me. Oh, yeah, she did. I love both these women, so I'm here for it.
I enjoyed a lot of this show. Like, I liked the Ed Harvey, Shea Samuels thing.
Wait, hold on. Hold. That was for, like, was that earned? Because I know it was just for the UK audience, not for people like me who had forgotten he had, like, a 2008 Chikara run in the States is it Shea Samuels or Shea Samuels?
Maybe it was Shea Samuels.
Well, just unless he's doing a multiple personalities gimmick, which can be death, going out mid-match and cutting a promo that I'm going against the company's rebranding of me, you all know who I am. I both love it and hate it, Chris, because it's a little too on the nose for me of what they do in story, but it's also for only, you know, the 200 people in England who are watching this, as opposed to, you know, but I just don't know. Maybe you're okay. Tell me why you like this so much.
I think that it moves this guy immediately into the Sam Gradwell kind of tier that NXT UK has developed out. And that's like a credible tier that they've kind of made. And so it allowed Samuels to have a justifiably competitive match with Joe Coffey, whereas if he was Scrubzo Magoo, it wouldn't have made any sense for him to have that match against Joe Coffey.
Scrubzo Magoo.
Scrubzo Magoo. Yeah, Scrubzo Magoo.
Somebody in the company is going to take that now. You know that. And they're just going to troll us. Here's Leon Ruff versus Scrubzo Magoo.
Scrubzo Magoo. His finishing move's the Scrub Buster.
Oh, I was going to go with the Magooinator or something like that. I want that now. Please drop that Easter egg just for this show. Scrubzo Magoo. I liked the Hunt promo, with the exception of most people say that they live in chaos.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no. Oh, yeah. Not another group here to cause chaos. There's the people who want to take over and the people who want to cause chaos, and neither actually do it.
And they don't even ever get close. Like this company's really bad at both takeover angles and chaos angles.
Yes. I want to see the wild boar bite off Mark Andrews' face. That's, you know, you want to cause chaos, make that special effect happen. I mean, we had.
The Hunt should be targeting people in various episodes.
Yeah, well, they should be like just killing one half of a tag team somewhere.
Yeah, like backstage, or someone's out there for a singles match, like, and the Hunt shows up.
I don't mean like they did it for, you know, oh, who jumped Mark Andrews backstage type of thing. I mean, I want blood. I want him to almost have been cannibalized by the Hunt. That's how vicious I want these guys to be. Not just, oh, I hit him with a chair backstage. Who could have ever done such a... No, I want a face ripped off. I want some Hannibal Lecter stuff being done. I liked the promo, though. I liked the mood of it. I liked it being in front of a cage. I liked Eddie Dennis. I think Eddie Dennis is a great spokesman.
I think so, too. He has... Look, we've been tough on the Dwagon, but he has a lot to offer as a spokesman.
Into the Dwagon. And the main event, okay, well, hold on.
Tyler Bate and Sam Gradwell was fun.
It was fun, but, man, that's the return you give Tyler Bate in the middle of the show, not the main event, and then do Walter another week? I mean, I love both shows, but, yeah, I want Tyler Bate to come back with a strong win as opposed to a back-and-forth match and then winning. I liked it. I just think... Again, I put Tyler Bate on a much higher level than I think WWE does.
Yeah, I think so, too. I also think Yogi Swami Tyler Bate is not an upper card gimmick, so, like, we might have to just get our brains around that one.
It's like Danica Patrick post-retirement right now, where she's doing this spiritual journey and yoga on her Instagram and talking to... You know, she has this vapid podcast where she talks to people who have been single-mindedly successful And well, you just have to believe in yourself and do it without all the luck that goes into it. No, it's just being focused and single-minded. And if you fail, it's your own fault, you know, all that crap. Sorry. That's a weird rant, but no, go with your point, please.
Jack Stars and Ilya Dragunov is intriguing. I like Jack Stars. He's going to have a competitive match here, and he's going to lose to Ilya, but I think he's going to show Ilya something, and he's going to show us something, and I like that. I think this beat's fun.
Main event, A-Kid versus Walter. Again, really strong match, I thought. My problem is you're beating the secondary title holder this quickly after winning
that
Heritage Cup. That I don't like. Me no likey.
Yeah, other than that, I mean, another great Walter title defense. He goes through these wars, and they're super competitive. I liked the narrative of this match, A-Kid targeting a limb. I continue to see a lot of things with A-Kid that I like. He might have a little bit of the Rey Mysterio school of acting in him when it comes to promos and everything.
Yes.
But I otherwise think that the guy's great.
Come on, guys. How can you be this good looking and not have charisma?
Just an energy void.
Do you guys go to bars?
Surely you would. I guess maybe you don't have to try that hard when you're, you know, spitting game when you look like that. But like, I would assume that sentences have to come out at various points.
No, you know, it's like you actually have to try, or do you just go, "Hey, look at me," and you just go home with you? I guess.
Hello, hola. Hi.
Hi. Okay. Boom. Out. That's it. That's why they never developed any
promo skills.
I love
you, sir. Let's go back to your hotel room.
Let's make an arrangement for a 24-hour relationship and then go our separate ways. Let's shake on the deal. Okay.
You know what? I'll pay you.
I'll pay you. Hey. While you're at it, can you look at my air conditioning? And now, the joy of the week. A show that, shockingly enough, despite some of its flaws, brought me such great joy. NXT on Wednesday. Ever Rise and the Grizzled Young Veterans. Oh, how this made me happy. Oh, how I love Ever Rise. Oh, how babyface fire Matt Martell made me lose my ever-loving S. I howled after all the smack talk. Babyface fire Matt Martell coming out there. I also just love the spot where he smacks the guy in the back of his head and just walks away. I love flaky heels versus angry heels. And this match was everything I could have hoped for.
This was so fun. Zach Gibson.
This was a 74-star match. Meltzer has 5 stars. This had 74 stars.
Zach Gibson comes out, immediately sets the dynamic with his promo. And this is the thing. This is the thing that he does as good as anyone in the business right now. It's at an elite level overall. He is so good at, hey, Zach, this is the dynamic of the match. Walk down to the ring, cut the promo, and make sure that we're framed up for what we're trying to do in this match here. And he does it perfectly. And lets us know that Ever Rise are, you know, there are underdogs. Because he's saying these guys have absolutely no chance in hell. And then when Ever Rise gets in there, like, Ever Rise rules! Like, you're kind of like, yeah.
You are
Ever Rise
idiots,
does rules.
You're damn right I'm rooting for you guys, you effing idiots. You go in there. You go have your match. You go, yeah, come on, Rudy did it. Rudy, you know, got into the game. You get into the game here, Ever Rise.
And they're really good in that role, too. Like, it's yes. So to your point earlier, like, these guys, like, kind of as a contrast to A-Kid, these guys do not have the A-Kid good looks, you know? But they actually
have.
How
dare you, sir?
They have the charisma that you need. Like the charisma where I can see their faces and maybe half understand or a third understand what they're actually saying because you're not supposed to catch it on mic, but you get enough of an impression of the actual narrative that's being told inside the ring by their faces, facializations, and body posture and stuff. Like, they've got the charisma, man. Everest is
fun. For the love of God, give Give them Malcolm Bivens, please. Please. We've seen them on the Twitter account doing stuff together, and they're wonderful. Let's get over ourselves, give Everise to this great manager, and get him on TV a lot more. I love Kurt Stallion, don't get me wrong, but Malcolm Bivens belongs with Everise. And write NXT, tweet at them, write your congressman, call up Triple H at the Performance Center. Don't go live because they'll think you're a stalker. And get Malcolm Bivens with Everise, for the love of God. MSK, the former Rascals debut, in a fantastic showing for them, I thought. Also, you know, I don't think they should be losing right now because they've never had any credibility. But I liked that Jake Atlas and Swerve did not bicker. I thought they were a fantastic team together, too. I enjoyed the hell out of this match.
Yeah, I enjoyed this. I thought they were bickering in the back later on.
They did. They did that. But during the match and during the course of it, it was still babyface and flaky cocky heel, putting a, hey, this is a business. We're going to go down here and win this. We're going to be, okay, great, great, great. And then afterwards, they get in the back and all hell breaks. Look, Chris, compared to how they book these types of things, where it's like
70%.
Somebody accidentally
take that
hits
70%.
Somebody.
Yeah, no, I feel you.
Or somebody hits a move, or somebody runs out on somebody, and they were actually focused on trying to win the tournament, and then they blow up backstage. This is subtle storytelling for them. I dug it.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Hey, you sold me. You sold me on this.
Johnny Gargano in the Gargano way. I'm here for it all. I'm here for every bit of this flaky dummy. I got you. Hey, I got you the document. Gargano is such a great flake, and I hate seeing him in this role because he should be the biggest babyface in the company right now. Although I do love Finn Balor Born Again Hardcore. I dig that. But Gargano and Candice, and even to a lesser extent, Indy and Austin, this entire stable works for me, Chris.
It really does. Like I understand and have the conflicted feelings about these talented people kind of all in a stable. But then the actual stable is a lot of fun. And it is something different. And it's being executed well. And, you know, wrestling's about staying fresh. So maybe this is a good thing. They can always go back to what's more their home field at whatever point they want to. You know, if they want to make Johnny a babyface again at some point, they can.
Breezango looked motivated this week. I thought this was one of their better showings since going back down. It helps that you have the Undisputed Era there. Now, I am wondering, I know what I'd like to see with the Undisputed Era. I don't think I'm going to get it because I think they're teasing kind of a 19, or what I'd like to see anyways, is I'd like to see kind of the 89 Horsemen angle with Sting and the Horsemen, where Sting is part of the Horsemen for a very short time. And then the rest of the group goes, no, you're out because you wanted to challenge Flair. I think they're kind of doing that with Kyle O'Reilly and Finn Balor a bit. I could see Finn Balor joining the Undisputed Era and them all turning on Kyle, but I don't think they're going that way. Where do you think they're going with this, Chris?
I'm wondering if Kyle O'Reilly and Finn Balor end up in the Dusty Classic through shenanigans. And then we have
a team can no longer perform, so we need a fill-in, and it ends up being against the Undisputed Era?
Yeah, eventually. Because they're on one side of the bracket, and they're on the other side of the bracket.
That would be something. Okay. No, you sold me on that. I'll take that. I really think the Grizzled Young Veterans should win this match, but I understand you can't because of who the tag champs are, and there's a tag title shot on the line with 1 and 2.
Right. Okay, yeah.
But there you go. There's the story, is you have these two teams who both want to fight 1 and 2. They're both on the same side. They're all friends except Finn, but, you know, it's... Okay, so Undisputed Era taking on Finn and Kyle O'Reilly in the finals of the Dusty Classic. Now, do they shake afterwards, or do the losers, who I assume will be the Undisputed Era, then turn on the other two?
I don't know. Maybe they all have to kind of unite at the end of it. Because, like, they've been really building the respect for Finn Balor angle thing over the last year and a year and change now, with, like, you know, Adam Cole initially having the match with Finn Balor. Like, if you run the clock that far back, it's all been about building respect between Balor and the Undisputed Era, and Balor kind of like being like the unofficial member of the UE.
Yeah. It's going to be, this is an inter, they've, you know, I love this new kind of born again hardcore Finn Balor.
No, he's great. I think this is
some great stuff. They've stayed away from the demon stuff, which I think is good and I think was necessary. They can bring it back eventually.
I'm
in no hurry whatsoever. I think he's cutting pretty good promos as well, which is new for him since New Japan, at least. But yeah, I like this. It's a little Stone Cold Finn Balor for me, but I like it overall. I don't want to see Dusty Classic matches on 205. I don't, but that's the only other thing I had. Anything else from NXT that you wanted to touch upon?
Xia Li enhancement match, like, good?
Oh.
Done well?
Yes! Perfect! Two shots! Strike, kick. 1, 2, 3. Do that! Now the aftermatch, going back in there, maybe a little much, because there wasn't as much kicking and punching.
No, especially when we get the Emperor Palpatine gesturing and stuff. Yeah, that was
finish
silly.
Him! Yeah, yes. No, okay. But, again, 70%.
70%.
We have to take the sports entertainment theatrics with the good. This was how we wanted Xia Li to be, though. You know, a striker, a killer, go in there, destroy some fool, 1, 2, 3, no big deal. They're doing a good job with that part of it, I think.
Yeah, I agree on that. And I think, you know, at the end, her presentation is just better. She looks good. She looks tougher. She's credible. It's weird timing in the sense that they're trying to push Raquel Gonzalez, and you would hope with a repackage of Xia Li like this that it would end with her winning the championship. But, you know, other than that.
Oh, she's not winning the title, but they are going to build her up to be a credible threat. And while you're doing that, you can have this. What did you think of Raquel's promo?
Good. Not great. Yeah, good. Not great.
Not great, but better than we've seen.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a lot more compelling now, I think. I don't know if they've officially broken her away from Dakota, which I think would be a shame, because I love that duo. But now that, I mean, can they do it in a way? See, I don't want them to do the split type of gimmick. I'd like to see a way where Dakota is seconding Raquel without overshadowing her, and also without Raquel abusing the other. I'd like to see them actually be a type of partnership in a way. Okay, but it's your turn to go for the title type of thing versus what they usually do. So I'm interested to see, because usually their plan for singles people is to break them off from whatever partnerships they've had type of thing, so that they look like stars versus a package deal.
Yeah, no, I think that's basically correct. I just have doubts about Raquel being able to really handle long form single matches at this point. I think that they've been doing a really nice job giving her air cover while she can grow.
Yeah, I would agree there. Although Io Shirai isn't, if you're going to do a long form match with someone, Io Shirai is probably the person to carry you to a great match.
I just think if they're going to give the belt to her event, to Raquel, she needs to be able to do carrying herself.
Yeah, I don't know if she's ready for the belt. That's the thing.
That's the other problem then too. She, you know, a character like that can't be climbing up and down the ladder too many times. You know what I mean? When they climb, they need to get to the top.
No, I agree there, but that's the weird thing is you look up and down this roster and the people you thought were going to take the title off of Io are either on their way out or they've turned them heel because you thought they were going to give it to another babyface at the time. Like, I thought Ember Moon, there was a chance. Candice LeRae might have been the person at the time if Rhea Ripley wasn't going to get the title back, but they turned her heel. I don't think Shotzi's ready, and I don't think she's the type who can carry the women's singles title, because I think she's...
I think she'd be a better fit than Raquel. Okay, so here's the question. So, okay, we agree on that then. All right. I was going to use that as a debate but if we agree, I think Shotzi's a stronger carry.
Well, right now she's a stronger carry because she's a stronger character. Not necessarily stronger in-ring, but, Shotzi's not as bad as sometimes I make her out to be. I mean, I'm hard on her because of that one match I saw live with her, but she can have great matches with great people. So, yeah, I think Shotzi might be ready for it. It's a very weird time in the NXT women's division because there's all this talent. I could see Toni Storm taking the title off of Io, but I don't know then what you do with Raquel. Do you have Raquel go after Toni? Because that'd be kind of interesting, but at the same time, they don't like doing that straight-up heel-heel stuff usually, but,
It's certainly not as a first title defense either, so, yeah.
Right.
Right.
No, I think you're right. I think if they're gonna push Raquel, they need to push her to the moon.
Yeah, I don't see a reason to have Raquel face Io unless she's winning the title.
I agree, and then you move Io up, hopefully.
Yeah.
Because she deserves to make that main roster money. Anything else from NXT?
I don't think so.
Then I will end it there. Thank you to MyBookie for sponsoring us. Use code ROPES. Get half your deposit in free play. I've done it. I've lost my free play and my money, but I've done it, and it's fun. Don't gamble what you can't lose. It's just for fun, kids. And they have all sorts of prop bets. I think they have, for our purposes, the will Trump go quietly with that in terms of not being forced.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say, I need real definition as to what quietly means in that sentence.
Again, would appreciate if you listened to my Between the Sheets from a week in January of 1986. I had a lot of fun talking 80s territory wrestling. And also listen to Andrew's show again, Music of the Mat, number 100, talking about the themes of Sting. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at DWATG. You can follow just the show and general episodes dropping at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. Chris, tell us about Don't Worry About the Government.
Yeah, Don't Worry About the Government. We'll have a new episode out here probably in the next day or two. I just need to sit and monologue. I did three, in a week last week here because of the news on the Capitol. So go and check those out. They're on don'tworry.tv. You can subscribe on iTunes, on Stitcher, and go to the Patreon, patreon.com/DWATG. By the way, we still have a Patreon for Shake Them Ropes. Which is patreon.com/shakethemropes. I want to get more content out there. So if you want us to do a watch along or want me to do a watch along, if you want more high wattage, I never heard anyone say that ever in the entire run of that show, which is sporadic. And, there might be another episode this year at some point. There probably will be.
Give us suggestions.
Okay. Yeah, give us suggestions.
Give us suggestions of what you want, what you would be willing to pay $1 a month for on the Patreon.